and welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA Anchorage and travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans.
This week, Inupiaq scholar Edna McLean discusses her recently completed North Slope Inupiaq to English Dictionary and the work being done to retain the cultural identity of the Inupiat. Her talk, In the Scheme of All Matters Inupiaq, was recorded on September 3rd at the Anchorage Museum as part of the museum's Smithsonian Spotlight series. Without further ado, Dr. McLean.
Welcome. In the Scheme of All Matters Inupiaq. I chose that title several months ago, and in the meantime, I've been thinking about what I meant by it, but I think it all came into focus when I started thinking more about it in terms of Inupiaq, thinking back into the past and then assess what's been happening since then. Paralugipsi was the first word that I used, and it means welcome. The title, this is In the Scheme of All Matters Inupiaq. I chose that title several months ago, thinking how I would fit in all that, in my mind, as I can recollect, has happened to the Inupiaq people. So I'm taking this in a chronological order, but not picking every little detail in each of the levels of time, but taking what I think are important events that have happened to shape the Inupiaq today. So Inupiaq means in the course of our being Inupiaq on the slope. In this presentation, I would like to draw your attention to the Inuit nation, the people of the Arctic, where we live, our history as another culture intrudes into our homeland, and how I think the Inupiaq to English Dictionary can be a source of knowledge. Can be a source of knowledge in building strong programs of retaining our linguistic heritage. When we look at a map of the circum-Arctic Ocean, we see that the Inuit nation occupies almost approximately half of the coastal lands. And when we focus on North America, we see the Inuit nation occupies all of the coast of the Arctic Ocean. So we cover a great deal of land. And we cultivated it, we hunted on it. We got our sustenance, almost half of our food, and the rest we got from the lands. As a circumpolar Inuit, we number approximately 159,000. 25,000 Inupiat in Alaska, 59,000 in Canada, and 71,000 approximately in Greenland, Kalaallit. The Inuit language is a continuum of dialects from the Arctic, Alaska, to the Canadian Arctic, through Canadian Arctic to Greenland. And our dialects have different names. In Alaska, it's Inupiaq and Khoiraq. And Khoiraq is a dialect of Inupiaq. And in Canada, they have several more dialects, and their large groups are grouped into Inuktitut, Inuvialuit, Inuttut. And in Greenland, they also have several dialects, but they call their language Kalaallisut, which is based on an old Norwegian name for a foreigner, they say. Okay. The traditional homeland of the Inupiaq of Alaska is divided into three regions: the North Slope Borough, Northwest Arctic Borough, and the Bering Straits region, each with their own regional governments. The culture of the Inupiaq people is strong. The bonds of sharing and a strong commitment as caretakers of the land and the sea for the animals that sustain us and enrich our lives has ensured our survival for thousands of years across the Arctic, the same kind of livelihood that the Canadians and the Greenlanders pursue is the hunting in the ocean and also on land. In the mid 1800s and then into the 1900s, the whalers and others from the east coast of the United States came in contact with the Inupiat, introducing new diseases and new institutions. The diseases killed many Inupiat, devastating families. As the hunters of each family died, the women with their children moved into established towns seeking food and shelter. I interviewed one lady from Barrow many years ago, and she talked about one of the measles epidemics. And she said her husband, who was a prime hunter in her family, and her oldest son got sick. But then after a while, they started feeling better. And so they went out hunting again and got worse and eventually died. So she said she had to, with her maybe four children, she walked all the way from their camp on the tundra into Barrow. And the only way that she was sustained, and this is like her belief in the spiritual world was very strong because of this experience, where she said each morning when she woke up, there would be four or five ptarmigan right in front of their sled. And then she would just have to tell her oldest son at that time then to go and kill the ptarmigan, and they ate. And they traveled like that for many days. So this shows the spiritual connection and really emphasizes the sustenance that we get from the spirit world as well. And that was an amazing story that I heard. And many of the women and their children moved into Barrow because they were established settlements at that time. But the people in Barrow were also suffering from the same diseases. So there was many suffered and died. This is a very bleak history of Inupiaq at this time. And I guess it happened because of two cultures coming together, one not having any immunities to the diseases that were brought into our homeland. Then again, the introduction of schools where Inupiaq knowledge, Inupiaq language, and the participation of our elders and other adults in our education was forbidden, causing generational loss of Inupiaq knowledge. It was a devastating period for many Inupiaq. And I and several of my friends here at least I see one who went through the schooling system that had that kind of behavior. And this type of treatment in schools has generated non-speakers of our children. I don't know what's happened to us, but then we did not speak our language to our children. It's some kind of phenomena that needs to be explained. We are gradually losing our ancestral language and the basis of a strong identity for being Inupiaq. The first language of our young people is now English. Many Inupiaq youth in our communities find it hard to achieve academic excellence in our schools. There are several reasons for this. There's different styles of teaching, where one is primarily on literacy, using literacy, reading and writing, and talking about subjects that are written down in books. And the other is by storytelling and talking about life experiences that are just full of lessons that they need to. And they weren't just lessons on how to be a Inupiaq, how to live with each other, but there were stories were full of explanations about the conditions of the ice, the behavior of the animals, how people, when they came about a situation, would react a certain way. So they were very detailed stories that the young people learned from these stories. And storytelling was a very vibrant activity in the education of Inupiaq people at the time. And because of loss of language, then the storytelling has gone down. But I know one person in here who's a storyteller, and she does a fabulous job of storytelling, our own Inupiaq Allison Warden. Yeah, so she conducts workshops all over the state using the storytelling technique of teaching to young people. And for that, I thank her very much. And the other result has been the self-destruction of young people, because they're caught in some kind of world that they have a hard time getting out of or joining. So, but over the years of several years, or many years, I should say, our leaders on the North Slope have come to understand that these kinds of situations occur when one culture meets another culture. and the other culture intrudes into your culture and maybe displacing some of the institutions that are in your own culture as well as into your language. So these things are being understood, being talked about, and there's discussion, there has been discussion of how a community can help itself. And many leaders like that you hear about in the state, like Jacob Adams, Edward Ittock, all of the leaders from our nowadays our corporate world have initiated programs where they talk about the things that are happening and establishing programs to help those who want to help themselves. We've established Elisarvik College, which is almost like a safety net for the many Inupiaq students who do not do well in the regular school system. So we teach them how to do well and then how to gain jobs. And then there are also recovery pathways for those who are using substance abuse and also physically abused. So all of these negative actions in a community happen because of cultural clashes and losing your footing of being Inupiaq in a community that is no longer just Inupiaq. So it takes a while for a culture to recover from that. But I think we're on the pathway. And as we learn more of the Western ways of being and also Western ways of interacting economically, then we're gaining a strong foothold on being Inupiaq. And we can then introduce many of our own values into the lifestyle, I think, of some of the other parts of Alaska. But now we're faced with a very fast environmental change. And that is, now we're at the brink where I think we're able to help ourselves. You know, our institutions are just beginning to become stronger in helping each other in our communities. And now this other threat of global change or climate change that affects the Arctic the most nowadays, and all the science that speaks to that. And we're once again caught in that situation. And it was many years ago, and if we, you know, I was going to show this picture of the polar bear, a very drastic looking polar bear that's starving. But I'll just show it a little bit because it's so sad that I'll just kind of go through it. And it's, but it was like my first experience in encountering a polar bear come on shore was while I was president of Elisarvik College. And we saw the bear swimming way out in the ocean, no ice, nothing, just water. And we watched it come on shore. This was from the college. I think I see Jennifer Harding over there. She was with the college at the time. And we saw this huge, silvery, beautiful polar bear come out of the ocean, and it collapsed on the gravel. It was so tired. It didn't even stop. It didn't even get up to go look for food. It was probably very hungry. But it slept, I think, for 3 days. People were watching it. The wildlife department had it all cordoned off. And then it finally started waking up. And all of the workers and students of Elisarvik College ran into the dormitories and into the administration buildings, because that polar bear was heading straight for the college, because we had a dump yard in the back of all the buildings. So it fed first there and then wandered off into the tundra. But we have all these firsthand experiences of how everything is changing for the Inupiaq people, as well as for all the animals that we depend on for our food. But I began the dictionary in response to a challenge that had been put forth to us as Inupiaq from our elders. And we had been gathering information, but not at a pace where that was comprehensive, because our elders had been telling us, I think from late 1970s, that our world, that our environment is going to change, that we need to document all that we knew as Inupiaq so we can use it as a source of strength to fall back on when things get tough. And also there will not be any resources for everyone as the whole world begins to change. And we used to listen to them and say, yeah, you know, and not really take it seriously, but then they had some kind of foresight to see things that were happening now, all the metal that's going into the Arctic, all the new gadgets that are coming into our lives, all of our dependence growing and growing on these other ways of living on the Arctic, and how some of it was being destructive because they saw a lot of the changes happening to the coastline at that time in the late 1970s. So I decided to then do a comprehensive, since my expertise was in linguistics, language, then I decided to really work at gathering all the information that I could get from the language. And I had help along the way. There were elders who helped that I consulted with, other people who gathered word lists from different dialects. And they were sitting around, so I said, okay, I'll gather all of these up and produce the dictionary. So this is the result of maybe I started back on it in 2006, and it was published a year ago. So it's almost a good 10 years of more work in compiling all the data that had been gathered. To me, and I was very excited to put into some kind of format all that I had learned by working with elders and on the Inupiaq language. To me, it's a source of pride, and it's a way to connect with my ancestors on how they conceptualized and categorized their natural and supernatural world environments. This dictionary contains a comprehensive grammar of the Inupiaq language. It has a large index in the back where you could, if most of our young people do not know how to speak Inupiaq, so they have to use English to get back to learn Inupiaq again. So there's a large index in the back where you can find Inupiaq words. I mean, find the English word and then go and find the Inupiaq word. And the Inupiaq word might be in several places throughout the dictionary. And then I have 31 appendices, and these appendices were chosen because of their cultural importance, and some that I didn't include that are just as important, like clothing, how to make clothing, because that work had already been done by Mrs. Foote way back in the 70s with the Point Hope people, where she documented, you know, like the pelt and how this is how you cut the pelt and this is how you sew it and this is how you make the stitches, that kind of information. Very comprehensive work she had done. And that book is published by the North Slope Borough Inupiaq History, Language and Culture Commission. The North Slope Borough has been very active in responding to the needs of the Inupiaq people. And we have a commission that deals with looking at all the permits that are given out to various industries before they start working on the land. So the dictionary is organized like an Inupiaq word. The basis and this, or the stems of words, like in this long word that I have up there, Anuklekpaktuwuk. They say the wind is blowing hard. The base is Anuklek. You can see the base in the long word, and then the QPAK is the post base, and the TUG up there now, which was TUQ, is the ending, which tells you that it's it, the element, the weather. And the enclitic, GGUUQ, is a reportative or evidential. So you can string all these units of meaning together and produce a complete word in Inupiaq. So the subject, the ending is, and the verb is all in one word. Like it was said, there's 15,000 stems in the dictionary, 1,056 post bases, 1,224 verb endings, 288 noun endings, and 24 enclitics. So that's a lot of words. And one category that I don't have listed here is the demonstratives. And I'll talk a little bit more about them later when I have time. Then words like Siqinik. About maybe 40 years ago, I was invited to give a talk at NASA about, and we were invited, indigenous peoples from the United States were invited to gather to talk about the origin of the universe, a big topic. But then we all ended up telling our own legends, our own myths about the origin of the universe, and how for Inupiaq it was like there was a Dulungikrak, which is the spirit of the raven, and also I guess some being that maybe was referred to as the god, if you wanted to call it a god at that time, but it was a spirit, Dulungikrak, which is related to the bird Duluak, which is the raven. So a raven appears in many of our legends. So there was a raven child who was born into a family, and the grandfather of the mother, I mean the father of the mother had two balls of light, but he stole one of them, eventually stole both of them, but he stole one of them, the brightest one, after he had grown up, then he turned into, and picked up the biggest ball and flew away with it. But he dropped it, and it splintered into many pieces. And after I learned how to divide up the Inupiaq words, he said, oh, that story fits nicely into our word for sun, Siqinik. You know, and it's when you study, I guess, the universe and the stars and the moon and all the planets, then the sun in our language was then described as a remnant or a product of that great big splash. So it made perfect sense to me when we were talking about the Big Bang Theory. I said, okay, that's fine, we accept it already.
You're listening to Addressing Alaskans with Inupiaq scholar Edna McLean. Dr. McLean recently completed her 1,450-page North Slope Inupiaq to English Dictionary and is involved in a wide range of activities aimed at retaining the cultural identity of the Inupiaq. Her talk, In the Scheme of All Matters Inupiaq, was recorded on September 3rd at the Anchorage Museum as part of the museum's Smithsonian Spotlight series.
And then another word, Isuma. At the time that I was attending University of Washington, I was taking these psychology courses, then courses on how learning and thought and all of that happens in your brain. So we were talking about the concept, I guess, of how a thought emerges in your brain. And we were using terminology like synaptic connections and things of that nature. So, and then all of a sudden, the word Isuma came into my mind. So, and Isuma means thought. But at the two units of meaning in that word are Isu, which is the end point of anything, and Ma, which is like a continuation of that, holding that position. So when you have a synaptic connection, then there's something happens to the end point, between two end points, and when it sticks, then it develops into a thought. Said, oh, here's another example of how our ancestors really thought about these things. You know, but where did... Anyway, so that's one word that I was really proud of again. Then there are other words like itkaktuk, he is remembering. It, the stem it means to exist. And qaq means to possess existence. And tuk is he, she, or it. So when somebody is remembering, then that piece of information that's in your brain, that's then you give it existence. Itkaktuk in the Inupiaq way of thinking. And then that's you remember that thought, that piece of information. Then the other one was puiguktuk. All of these were in the same class, and I never missed a class in that course, so I was having so much fun. But puiguktuk, he is forgetting, or he forgot. Pui means to surface, and the uq means to do it like this, one after the other. And tuk, you know by now, is means he, she, or it. So puiguktuk was that piece of information that's really not up there, but it keeps sinking and it's coming to surface once in a while for you to come down and itkakit. So it was fascinating to be in that class. Then there's one from the other side. Then there's the Inupiaq word, like, my English corrected it. No, it didn't. Ignit means fire in Inupiaq, and the English word ignite comes from Latin. It's not ignite. It's I think my computer corrected itself. It's the I-G-N-I-S, supposed to be the stem or root for the I, or the concept of fire. So I said, okay, this is coincidental probably, but it was fun. You know, it made learning fun, and I wanted to dig more into that information. So, and I keep hoping that other Inupiaq will do that and then become very intimate with their language and learn how to make all these connections. So if you study linguistics, then you'll get exposed to all the Greek root words and Latin root words, all of those things, and have more information at your fingertips. And then another Inupiaq word, Allah, which means other. The Greek stem is all, I guess, other. And it's related to the English word allophone, which means other phoneme. So there are these little tidbits that are exciting to bite into as you're learning about a particular subject. I think the same kind of thing can happen to maybe if you're studying topography of the ocean or the land and animal relationships and animal behavior. Those other subjects can fit right into the Inupiaq knowledge that we have through our language. And then the verb endings. There are many of those. And I know Roy, sitting here in front, remembers all of the verb endings that we had to analyze in my grammar class at the University of Alaska. It wasn't a conversational class, really, but we tried to put in a little conversation. But it was more an exploration of the and discovery of the all of the verb endings that Inupiaq used to express ideas. There are three verb endings here. The TUQ, which is an it is raining. So it's like just an observation. You know, it's water's coming down. And Seluka means that you see the rain falling down on the ground. Okay, it's hitting the ground. It has this object. But Selukatigut means you're immersed in that the raining environment. So you're part of all of the world that's around you. And this is a term that is losing. It's losing to a sialuktok, which is more objectified. You might say it's just an observation. But sialukatigut means you're in it. You're in that environment. You're involved in it. You're getting all wet. And something's falling on you. So it's that type of a feeling can be recaptured if you really immerse yourselves in all the verb endings that are in Inupiaq. Sometimes they're a big stumbling block for others who want to learn the language. And then we gathered all the information that we could about the traditional Inupiaq sod house. And this work was based on some archaeologists that come up to Barrow to do all this, all the interviews, and I was part of that group. And then we had Ron Engstrom from Anchorage, who's a very good illustrator, do all the illustrations. So students can build a sod house, or anyone could build a sod house looking at this, with the accompanied by the explanation sheet. Then we also focused on the bowhead whale, because that's a mainstay of our culture. It's a very important activity that we pursue during spring and also fall. And knowledge was being lost about, okay, how do we shear the whale? Because that's you have to shear the whale once you catch it, once you kill it. And bring it to the before you bring it to the village. So we worked with two or three elders to identify all the different sections of the bowhead whale and how you share them. And you can look at it very closely and see, okay, which one goes to the captain, which one goes to the crew, and what do you cook the first night you bring the whale onto the into the village? Because then the whaling captain has to put on a great big feast during when they bring the whale up, and then later on during a celebration in June. And then they share it as well during Thanksgiving and Christmas, so incorporating all the other festivities that have become part of our lives. And I know that these pictures are being used by the school teachers in the classrooms, and also by anyone who just wants to learn more about their culture. About the Inupiaq culture. And it's a wonderful feeling to know that the dictionary is not just sitting on the shelf, but it's being used in schools and on somebody's desk as a reference book. So it's, I think you might say, we can still use the dictionary in our Inupiaq lives today. We can use this as a good source of reference for Inupiaq materials. And then there are other topics like kinship, which is very important to us, is also explained heavily in the dictionary. And how words, our names are not just names, but not a what, but a who. Who is your name? Was one of the phrases that was being corrected by all the teachers on the North Slope, as I recall. We couldn't say, who is your name? To us, that was proper because you're named after a person, and the thinking is that the life force of that person stays with you and some of the characteristics. And then, and designating it as what was, you know, it was like an affront to our thinking. But anyway, so these are, that's how I think the Inupiaq dictionary is being, I guess, filtering into our lives right now as a way to, okay, when you think of an idea, then you go to the dictionary and see what it says about the definition, and then go on and use it in your everyday life. Okay, that's enough, I think. Do you have any questions?
An audience member asks whether the North Slope Inupiaq Dictionary covers any of the Canadian Inuit languages as well.
It does not cover the Canadian Inuit. They have their own dictionaries. They have multiple dictionaries. And the Greenlanders have a very comprehensive digital dictionary online. They're still working on it. So the Greenlanders are working on an application where they can produce Greenlandic words, you know, using a word generator. So they're really exploring the grammar of their language and how it then connects all the different pieces. Like I was talking about, the stem, the postfaces, the endings, and the enclitics mesh together. So it's a, this is not going to be the end of Inupiaq dictionaries. There's a lot that needs to be done. Like I have a list of all the mammals, birds, insects, all of those things. Somebody needs to go in there, take those words, and publish a book showing pictures of all of the birds, all of the names. And so there's still a lot of work to be done. I'm not going to do it, so somebody else will have to. The dictionary is open for anyone to use. I've told the University of Alaska Press that I would like for anyone who asks to use certain illustrations or whatever, that they have their permission, if the University of Alaska Press says they give their permission. So we want the dictionary to be used. And other words, I'm also working with another person to put audio into the words. So, and the North Slope Borough Inupiaq History, Language, and Culture Commission has their own product called the Word Finder, Inupiaq Word Finder, that you can access through your iPhone. But it's based on the index of the dictionary. So I'm happy that a lot of things are being generated from the dictionary.
An audience member asks how recently Inupiaq began being used in written form.
Inupiaq was not a written language, but it began, the Inupiaq people began using the English alphabet to write Inupiaq once they learned how to use the English alphabet. So, and there's a history of development. There was one Inupiaq named Sheldon Sylvan from a small village called Wainwright. His father had translated some English hymnals into Inupiaq, but he needed to put them down on paper. So his son Sheldon, using the English alphabet, did a whole translation of all the hymnals. So that's the first systemized writing that I have seen. And it's he used the English language to develop a writing system. I mean, the English alphabet to develop an Inupiaq writing system. And that Inupiaq people used that up until maybe 1946, when Reverend Roy Amawak and a linguist named Eugene Nida developed a one sound, one symbol writing system, which was linguistically correct. So, and people used that for a while until there was a change in 19. what was it, 1972, I believe, where all the some of the diacritical marks on the symbols were replaced with another letter from the English alphabet. And we used that until 1972, maybe. Maybe the other change was in the 40s or 50s. So, but we changed the dotted K to a Q. I just came from Canada. I went to Iqaluit, Nunavut, Canada, to talk about the Inupiaq writing system, the development of the Inupiaq writing system. And another person from Greenland came and talked about the Greenlandic writing system and the status of the language. We went there to share our information because they are in the process of choosing one writing system, because Canada now has two writing systems, one based on syllabics, which is also used by the Cree language, and the other one based on Roman alphabet. So, and they're leaning towards a Roman alphabet system, writing system, which is, I don't know what to say about that, so I kept my mouth shut on when they were talking about which way should we go. But I like the syllabics, because not just because of the way it looks, but because of the large numbers of Inuit people who are literate in the syllabics. They know, right? They write stories, they correspond to each other in syllabics, and much of every communication, oral communication that they do, they say is in syllabics, but it's in Inuktitut. So to them, the syllabary is theirs. It's more Inuk or more Inuit than the Roman writing system, is what they say. So they have a big, very big and very hard decision to make when they choose one writing system.
Finally, an audience member asked the speaker to address similarities between North Slope Inupiaq and dialects of the Inuit of Northern Greenland.
Maybe in the early 80s or late 80s, I went to attend an Inuit Circumpolar Conference in Greenland, and James Nareq, her uncle, came to the same meeting, and we went to a reception, and it ended up with this man who was standing against the wall all by himself. So we went there and talked with him, and he spoke Inupiaq. It's still Kalaallisut, but he had a lot of our endings, because there's a lot of assimilation of sound in Greenland. But this man had our endings that weren't so assimilated. So we had a conversation with him without any problem. Sometimes I have to ask other Greenlanders what that means in their language, in their dialect, and then I can translate it. Because some of the words are a little off, you know, when you're between different dialects. There's some words that they use to refer to human activity that we use only with machines, you know, so that type of difference. Not very big, but it makes a difference. So Kanak is, from that one experience, I know was very easy to understand in Northern Greenland. And another experience by one of my uncles, Thomas Brower, he and his wife went to Labrador to see the Inuit people there. They had heard about them from a television program. So they went there, and Tommy said that he spoke with the Labradorians, Inuit, and had no problem understanding them. So Tommy would be, he's gone now, but he was my uncle, one of my oldest uncles. So, Deborah, Khoyanakpak.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans with Inupiaq scholar Edna McLean. Dr. McLean recently completed her 1,450-page North Slope Inupiaq to English Dictionary and is involved in a wide range of activities aimed at retaining the cultural identity of the Inupiaq. Her talk, In the Scheme of All Matters Inupiaq, was recorded on September 3rd at the Anchorage Museum as part of the museum's Smithsonian Spotlight series. Thanks for tuning in with us today on Addressing Alaskans. Until next week, I'm your host and producer, Evan Erickson.
Addressing Alaskans is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Theme music is by Patrick Lee. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to our website at alaskapublic.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. Learn more about Addressing Alaskans and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.